8:30 WGN, the Wintrust Business Lunch here. A short one till 12:30 till White Sox pregame. And John Hansen in for Amy Guth on this kind of dreary Saturday summer afternoon here in Chicago. And thank you so much for listening here. We're going to jump into the merger between AT&T and Time Warner in just one second. But I do want to mention we're going to talk about the Build-A-Bear fiasco that went on Thursday, where you could pay your own age. So if you brought a one-year-old, you could get a Build-A-Bear for $1. And I thought that's a great thing for kids, of course, because they're so young. But what would be really fun as an adult to be able to pay your own age? You have to talk about in golf world, it'd be great if you could golf your own age, low score. If you're, 78 or something, you hit a 78 on the golf course. That's incredible. So 312-981-7200. Probably won't have any time for phone calls, but if you got any texts, what would you love to pay your own age for? What would be the advantage of paying your age for something as an adult? So we can get into that. Okay, so the AT&T Time Warner merger is one of the bigger mergers that's been in news in really the recent past, and now it's turning into one of the bigger antitrust challenges in our era. And here to talk about that and break down the latest is Brent Kendall. He's a reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Brent, thanks so much for joining us here on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No, absolutely. And let's talk about the recent development, of course, that the government will appeal the decision in that the trial judge made last month. Can we talk to the timing here a little bit? After the trial judge made the decision to throw out this challenge, had AT&T and Time Warner, had they started already kind of going through the motions, or had they protected themselves in case there was a government challenge so that they really haven't dove too deep into this merger yet?
Well, so a little bit of both. I mean, they have closed their merger. I mean, at this point, they are one company. When the trial judge ruled against the government, he urged them not to seek what's called an emergency stay, which could have kept the merger on ice while they tried to appeal. The government ended up not doing that. And so once they did that, AT&T and Time Warner closed, but they agreed effectively to, not scramble the egg, so to say, too much. So, I mean, AT&T owns Time Warner, but they're, in a way holding the assets kind of in a separate unit. So if down the line they were to lose and a court, decided after all that this merger was unlawful, that it would be at least theoretically possible to undo the deal without having things be all mixed up. So that's where we are. AT&T at this point says, though, that everything is full steam ahead. And, the appeal is going to certainly create some uncertainty for them, but it's some uncertainty that they're going to have to live with for many months.
What's the timing of this? Because the government didn't even really decide to say exactly what they're going to base their appeal on. It now goes to the District of Columbia Appeals Court, which we've been talking about recently because that's where Brett Kavanaugh comes out of and Merrick Garland as well. So it now goes to that court, and what's the timing? How long does this sort of thing take?
Well, it depends. I mean, what we're all waiting to find out now is whether the government and or AT&T asked the court to expedite the case. Now, under the normal time frame, DOJ started the process this week saying we appeal, and then down the line they would file a brief, and then AT&T would file a brief, and eventually you'd have some oral arguments, and that whole process can take many, many months. If the court were to agree to hear it on a faster track, I mean, it could set a different schedule from the normal schedule of cases. At a bare minimum, it's going to take 3 to 4 months to decide this. That's even if they speed up the process. And if they go at the normal speed, I mean, it could take a year.
Mm-hmm. I wanted you to dive in a little bit more about this idea of vertical versus horizontal mergers. First, could you explain a little bit more the difference between the two, why this one's a vertical one, and why it's kind of rare to see this challenge on a vertical merger?
Sure. So most of the cases that you see the government bring are what we call, mergers of horizontal competitors. So if you look at some of the cases in recent years, you had Staples and Office Depot that wanted to merge. I mean, those are head-to-head companies that are each trying to sell us office supplies. The government also blocked some health insurance mergers where you had major health insurers who were competing head-to-head, to insure workers at all sorts of Fortune 500 companies. They wanted to join forces. So in those sorts of cases, the government argues that when you eliminate one competitor that was a rival from someone else, that the market is going to suffer, and that's going to mean higher prices. In the vertical context, what you're normally talking about are companies that are more complementary. And so here, AT&T, it has its wireless business. It owns DirecTV, which, obviously distributes pay TV. And then Time Warner owned HBO and all the Turner networks, which are networks that all the different pay TV providers need. And so what the government argued here is that AT&T, by virtue of owning DirecTV, if it had all these Turner networks, which it knows that other pay TV providers, whether it's Dish or Comcast or whoever else, they need those networks, that once they owned the networks, that they could charge more for them. Because if some people got upset about a potential blackout on a rival like Comcast or Dish, then they could just go become a DirecTV subscriber. So AT&T would sort of be in a win-win situation. You know, AT&T said it would not have additional leverage after it owned Time Warner, and the judge in the case pretty much agreed with AT&T across the board.
Right. He even went to say, look, if you're going to black out certain channels or the distribution of some, people can make the decision to go somewhere else because this is, it's a vertical merger. This is not a takeover of the market of consumers in a sense. It's just the rearranging how it's distributed.
Well, I mean, part of the question at the end of the day was still whether it was going to raise prices. And, I mean, the judge basically said, you know, AT&T is going to lose money if it threatens to black out these channels on other providers, because at the end of the day, whether it's TBS or TNT or all those networks, they make money by having lots of eyeballs on them, because that's how you sell it to advertisers. And so the judge said at the end of the day, AT&T would lose more money than it might gain, you know, in some subscribers that it picked up for DirecTV. I mean, the Justice Department's still adamant in its belief that the judge got this wrong and that, you know, his view of how this would all play out is kind of contradicts what some of the economic theorists say, but you know, the judge sort of favored what he viewed as real-world evidence as opposed to you know, what he sometimes derisively referred to as kind of this academic theory, which he didn't think was really gonna happen.
Right.
So
like
we'll see if the if the government has any more luck the second time.
Right, like fact-based versus these broad legal conclusions. I imagine fact-based conclusions are more difficult to overturn as when it gets to the appellate court level.
That's right. I mean, you know, one of the main jobs of a trial judge, you know, you're sitting there on the bench and you have witnesses who sit right next to you on the stand. And, you know, you, through hearing all that testimony, decide who you feel is the most credible and and persuasive. And on those sorts of matters, I mean, it's very rare for an appeals court, you know, with judges who weren't part of the trial to second guess what a judge did, you know, in terms of how he evaluated witness testimony. I mean, you know, trial judges do make errors in how they construe the law. And so, I mean, if there are arguments the government can make that the trial judge made legal arguments, as opposed, you know, in terms of like what standards he used or how he applied the standards for proof in the case, then, you know, they may have arguments there. But on, you know, the fact that the judge was persuaded a lot by AT&T CEO Randall Stephenson, I mean, the appeals courts, one of the things they're not going to do is the kind of thing and say, look, you know, we don't find Stephenson very persuasive. That's just right. Not the appeals court's role.
All right, I got to ask about the big elephant in the merger. The people who don't appreciate this, saying that it's President Trump. This is a vendetta against CNN and is disdained for it. They say that look, the motivations that the government is providing don't line up with other cases that they've argued for or against. That this has to be a vendetta against CNN. Obviously, you can't answer that. Is there any possible way to know how much truth there is in that, or will that always just kind of remain a mystery since we don't know the inner workings 100% between the president and the Department of Justice?
Well, I think it's inevitable that will always kind of hang as a bit of a cloud over this case. You know, the people who brought the suit are insistent that, you know, politics had nothing to do with it. You know, AT&T, in a sense, is correct when it is said that, you know, there hasn't been a fully litigated case like this in 40 years. But it's not true that there are never vertical merger enforcement actions. It just so happens that they normally end up in settlements. So when the Justice Department would look at a merger that was vertical in nature that raised problems, I mean, normally the people who would be merging would make some kind of concession that would address the government's concerns, and then the government would agree to sign off. And so that didn't happen here. You know, the parties wanted to make this an issue at trial, but they were going to need what's called discovery, you know, access to internal government documents to see if there was evidence there that they could put on. And the judge in the case basically short-circuited them on that before trial and said, you know, there are all sorts of privilege-related issues for internal government deliberations, and we're not going to give you, the companies, you know, a wide range to just fish through all these internal government communications to see if maybe something's there.
Right.
So, you know, it's hung over all of the atmospherics of the case, but it's played little, if any, role in the program since the proceedings started.
All right, Brent, thank you very much for keeping us updated, and this will be something we follow over the next couple of months. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to talk about Build-A-Bear. Get your text in, 312-981-7200. What would you like to pay your age for? They got to do it as kids, $1 for a Build-A-Bear if you were 1 year old. What would you like to do as a 50 or a 60-year-old pay that much money for to be able to get? That's coming up next on the Winter's Business Lunch. Happy Saturday afternoon. Man, this music is fitting the mood here. The cloudy skies, little spits of rain out there in downtown Chicago. And thank you so much for joining us for the next few minutes as we get up to White Sox baseball here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hansen filling in for Amy Guth today. I'm sure a lot of you heard about this Build-A-Bear promotion gone wrong. I don't necessarily see it as going wrong. I'll talk about that in just a little bit. But here to break it down is Haley Mensick. And Haley, you're part of the team that kind of covered this thing. And Haley, were you out in Oak Brook when you were doing this, or were you here in Chicago at the location on Michigan Avenue?
So I was out in Oak Brook. I arrived there around a little after 2 on Thursday.
And this was Thursday, and they said it was pay your age. So you could pay if you had a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old. They both wanted to build your bear. They could each get one for only $12, which is pretty good because usually they start around $12. So what was the scene like? Paint us the picture of what Oak Brook looked like on Thursday.
Okay, so when I walked in a little after 2, it was just so many people outside in the courtyard, probably like a line of like 100 people. And I was just surprised because there was a lot of security. There were like 3 security guards. There actually was like a canine police unit.
Wow.
But but I think what made it different from like a Black Friday kind of scene was just the sheer amount of children, especially very young children, because that's kind of the point of the whole promotion.
Yeah, what a strange juxtaposition. Yeah, what a strange juxtaposition to see the canines with the children right there as well. So obviously, yeah, this got really out of hand in terms of the number of people that wanted them. So is there any estimate how many people actually were able to get them? How many people were turned away, even if it's just percentage-wise? I guess ultimately, did a lot of people go home without bears?
You know, I can't really speak to that just because there was a little bit of confusion on exactly when they closed the line down. Because I think that a lot of people came there pretty early in the morning, around like 8 or 9. And then sometime around 11, they had stopped the line. So anyone who was in line at that point could keep waiting, but no more people could like enter. So I think that we had a picture from Twitter somebody else posted that we put in our article, and somebody estimated about like 1,000 people in the line before they shut it down.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I imagine that doesn't even take into account the people that walked up, saw the line, and said, nope, not today. Sorry, kids.
Yeah, I actually spoke with somebody who, we were both walking in from the parking lot, and I asked her what she was doing at the mall, and she had brought her 2 children. She had a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old, and she had told them that they were going to go to Build-A-Bear, but they'd actually received an email from the company right before, so she still took her kids to the mall because they just wanted to see the line and everything, and then they got some ice cream.
My favorite part of the article is when you talked to, I don't know if it was the same couple, they went to get pretzels, but the line was too long there, too.
Yeah, definitely. There was just a lot of people at the mall overall for Thursday afternoon.
I guess that's a teaching moment for kids, right?
Yeah, I think that it is, yeah.
You don't always get what you want. So the company said they're going to provide a voucher, which isn't the same as the Build Your Age. It's $15 off, which where the bears typically start around $12. That's still going to save you some money. I guess I wanted to ask you one last question here, Haley. A lot of people are saying this is a big snafu for the St. Louis company, that they're going to lose a lot in publicity, and of course, but I imagine a lot of people say, look, I mean, they tried something new, it got their name out there. Were any parents walking away saying, I'll never come to Build-A-Bear again? Or were they saying, you know, this is sometimes what happens when companies try big things?
Yeah, you know, I think that the overall kind of like feeling was just that this is what happens when companies try the big things. I don't think people were really angered that they were having to wait for 5 hours because they were doing it voluntarily.
Right.
I think that it was just kind of like, it was just kind of a crazy moment for all of them, but I don't think none of the parents I spoke to necessarily were like furious or anything or had a terrible experience.
If they did, I think that they should recheck their priorities. And yes, it might have been a little frustrating, but hopefully it all works out. We are talking about stuffed bears after all. Haley Mensick from the Chicago Tribune, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. We'll wrap things up next here on the Winter's Business Lunch.